Cliffcentral. The revolution.
I've got something important to tell you.
Cliffcentral.com.
Welcome to the Futurology Show. On this nice public holiday, it's what is it today? Monday the 2nd, I think. Oh yeah, because in South Africa we get public holidays on Mondays, when Sundays are public holidays.
It's called a bank holiday.
Bank holiday, cool. Well, it's funny you should mention the word bank. So that voice that you heard there is none other than Brett St. Clair, my guest co-host today. How are you, Brett?
Oh, very well, and you, Brett. Great to be on the show.
Yeah, it's nice to have you here. I dragged you out of bed or a bar. I'm not sure which one.
Probably both.
So anyway, not to break from tradition, I always like to start the show off with the app of the week, and this is no different. Now, I know I'm going to get hate mail, but this week's app of the week is the new Angry Birds game called Action. And there comes the stuff being thrown at me. So the reason why I chose this game as opposed to any of the other gazillion billion new apps out there is it has a really, really cool feature besides the gameplay where it's basically the traditional Angry Birds meets pinball. So like you're playing forward into the screen, not sideways as a side runner. There's a feature that's, you know, well, as you probably know, there's a new Angry Birds movie coming out. I think it comes to South Africa next week sometime. And in the game, it says to you that if you take your game to the movie and wait for it, wait for the credits. So you can't leave early or get up and stand and turn the game on. So it's obviously using like a Shazam or listening type app. You'll get more content or another level or something like that. So for a diehard fan, it's something I definitely have to do.
I tell you, I'm a diehard fan as well, but I noticed my tip of the day is use Wi-Fi at 319 megs download.
Is that what it is?
Oh, yeah. It's going to take a bit of time to rejoice using your Angry Boy app, I guess.
So as Brett says, the other Brett, what do we call you today, Brett? Because B2 is jet-lagged. He says he's jet-lagged.
Well, B2 bomber.
B2 bomber.
Yeah, well, call me a bomber, you know.
Okay, bomber. There we go. So as bomber says, when we talk on the show, I've been trying to get you here. Brett and I have been trying to get you here, so we have the three Bretts.
Awesome. But our audience would have no idea who's talking.
Can you imagine? Imagine the poor producer as well. Sorry, Brett, can you turn up your level on your mic? Which one? That one? The other one? Bomber 2, 1-2? Anyway. So, yeah, so I just thought that was pretty cool. On the basis that, you know, it's using tech, it's integrating external apps like Shazam. I think that's my app for the week. Staying with apps, I don't know if you followed the news on Uber and their lovely newspaper media stuff that's going down as well. So basically, I've just got back from Durban. They've been marching on the Minister of Transport in Durban and they've given them an ultimatum, they being the taxi guys and all that. They've given them an ultimatum, I think, of 14 days to respond. They are losing money. They are...
when you say they, the drivers.
The drivers, yeah. The taxi
with
company.
With the 20% reduction, right?
No, well, you see, I mean, not the drivers themselves, the taxi, like the metered taxis.
Got it.
They're petitioning this. Okay. They're saying they pay licenses, they pay registration fees, and all these wonderful things, and Uber doesn't. And they've pulled a little bit of an Al Capone. They're going after Uber on tax. So they've lodged a complaint that Uber doesn't pay its taxes. That's their claim. So they had the main guy from Uber on there.
Alon,
that's right. Yeah. Litz or something.
Yeah.
Say, well, anyone can come and check our books. We pay our taxes. But I mean, it's like pretty much Al Capone. I was thinking like the mafia of Al Capone days, you know. Can't get the guy for murdering people in public. You know, can't get Uber for good service. Can't get Uber for
drinking
great
and
value. Stopping us drinking and driving. Their drivers don't really take advantage of anyone in the back of their cars because they measured an app. But those are irrelevant, you know. Here's a newsflash, guys. Get over it. If you're losing money, change your bloody business model. Stop ripping people off. And be a fair meter taxi. In fact, Alon said that. He said, we're happy to work with them.
Oh, they're happy to share the technology. Let 100%. Them use the same technology that 100%. Can scale the Uber business.
So bottom line is, you know, the same with Airbnb and all these other brilliant products. People's turn around. And as soon as it does well, no, let's be honest, as soon as it blows up, okay, the guys just go, well, we're useless. We've been ripping people off for 3,000 million years. Well, let's just cry foul. Doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
there's another one that started in South Africa as well, I think. Taxify or something.
I heard about it. I didn't get the actual name. I heard them talking about it, but I didn't go further than that. Well, that's good news, though. A bit of competition in the space.
I think it's good. And I don't think even Uber has a problem with it, except for if you look at the stuff that happens in the States, where like oaks are hailing each other's cabs and there's no one there just to get them off their grid. Anyone wants to phone in? Let's be realistic. I mean, it's a public holiday, but we'll do the stuff. It's 0861555189. Or you can get us on Twitter or Facebook or WeChat. Anyway, so enough on Uber, but that was the one of the things that I came across today. Staying with cars, though, at midnight tonight, no, the petrol price doesn't go up. That's tomorrow, and that's something I'm not even going to get into. But diesel does come down a whopping 2 cents. Don't spend it all at once, and you can't even buy a Chappie. But at midnight tonight, the opportunity for a 60% reduction in your e-toll bill falls away. So apparently...
What do you do?
No, I mean, you go and pay. But definitely.
I'm there.
You fight the queues. In fact, you don't have to. You can pay online. I actually was listening to Wayne Divinage. I hope I pronounced that.
Yeah.
Divinage. I hope I pronounced that
bit
right.
A legend.
He actually came on here and said, listen, don't believe the hype. The SANRAL guys are claiming 300-something thousand people have quickly taken advantage of this last minute. It's bullshit. No one's paying tolls. They can take their tolls. In fact, someone did take their tolls a few weeks
Please
ago.
Don't tell me they put it somewhere.
Someone stole a gantry in 20 minutes in broad daylight out there on the R25 or something. They cut the freaking thing down and took it away and got away with it. Anyway.
Scrap metal.
It's good scrap metal. So people, please don't pay your e-tolls. I mean, I'm not advocating breaking any laws or anything, but there's a class action suit that's already been filed against the 5,000 odd subpoenas, whatever you call it, that have been issued. So sorry for you, SANRAL, SCAMRAL, whatever you want to call yourselves. I'm not paying. None of my friends are paying. And you're welcome to serve your notices wherever you are. Bring it. Right, enough free press for e-tolls and everyone else. So this is Futurology. How's that? It sound like I pushed the button today. This is Futurology.
Not really.
No, okay. This is Futurology. Well, I'm still waiting for them to record this thing for me. It's only been a few months.
Ba-dump.
There was a hint, by the way, Duncan. I'm waiting for my... Okay, I'm getting the thumbs up. Sony... Okay, now there's a sad, happy brand. I had to add that. Actually, I had to add the word happy in there. I love Sony.
I love Sony too.
Okay, so I do love Sony. And I've always loved Sony. And in fact, when I do use an Android phone, I have a Sony.
I've just bought a pair of Sony headsets.
There
Stunning.
We go. Okay.
Fantastic.
So here's where I'm sad with Sony is that I don't think they've done enough. And I think the market knows that they haven't done enough. And hopefully, they're going to do something. But what they have done, I think it was last week or the week before, they filed a patent on a contact lens that has a built-in camera with video capability as well.
Is it called an eyeball?
Maybe, but with an eye. Oh, no, that would be Apple.
That would be an eye contact lens.
So it is a contact lens.
It's fascinating.
No, it's amazing. Listen to this. You blink like you're doing now. Are you winking at me or are you blinking?
That's just one wink.
Uh-huh. Nice. So you blink and it will activate. So it's obviously paired to your phone and it's got an app and all those good things. But you can start video recording and the whole thing, I was reading or watching the press release, the video, the teaser. The whole thing is that we spend our lives looking at screens. So, you know, you go to your kid's school, you watching something, you at a rock concert, and all we do is watch through our phones.
It's fascinating.
Now they're saying take back life. So you watch it like you normally would, but you are still recording the memory without having to hold up your phone.
It could be like a Google Glass to the next level.
Yeah, well,
you
Brett,
start with
I
the
mean,
camera,
you know, put you, the saline. You know Google Glass firsthand. Yeah. It was great in principle, but there were still issues.
Freakiness.
Huh?
Was it called glass holes?
Glass holes. Weren't you a glass hole, Brett?
Just a little bit.
I remember a profile picture with you with a
still
Google
have
glass.
It.
There we go. Glass hole, and I'm allowed to say that. I think that's just jealousy more than anything else. So I think that could be a game changer because I did a little bit of research into Sony and it sounds like they've kind of gone back to their roots in a way in the lenses. They're supplying a lot of lens and camera technology to other handset manufacturers.
Awesome.
The PS4, I mean, it's awesome. I have no idea what's coming out in PS5, but anyway. So Sony,
if you're
listening.
Retina activated PS4 experience.
Isn't that called virtual reality? Yeah. Like with their new headset.
You just move your eyes around and you can control where you are.
Yeah, okay. So that'd be pretty cool. I always take it to the gutter. But yeah. Imagine going to gym. Okay, no, think about this. So remember the whole issue with Google Glass? You saw people wearing glass, you're like, excuse me, sir, but you can't bring that in here. You can't check the contact lenses.
Yeah.
So now you're like, just think about it. I don't even have to explain.
Well, that should be like a different color, green or red or purple. Or maybe so you know you're
like
wearing
scanners.
Them.
Scanners. You know when you walk into a club and they scan your eyeballs. Now they'll scan your eyeballs. Sorry, sir. So anyway, it is interesting that they're going that route. And you know, even if it doesn't go to market, the fact that people are thinking like that, that's pretty cool. I mean, Internet of Things. You could look at the device; it could turn on. You know, so I think there's some cool stuff coming there. Now, today, I'm about to introduce our guest, who's sitting there quietly and smiling, and I'll turn his mic on for him just now. But before we get into it, and this is definitely a fintech show, I mean, we're going to go into fintech, but I think the world needs to wake up and realize that there's a little place, which is actually quite big, called China. China has a company called Alibaba. Are you going, did you see this? With the acquisition of Lazada. Lazada, I think I pronounced it right. Yeah, Lazada.
Their treasure troves have over $100 billion ready to spend on fintech.
$100 billion
that they're going to spend on fintech. Never mind these acquisitions and startups.
So let me throw two little... Yeah. Well, I thought they were significant, but now that you put that number on the table, they seem relevant. So Alibaba bought Lazada, and Lazada they were an e-commerce enabler in Southeast Asia region where there is no banks and there is no online. And we all know that China and its surrounds are quite conscripted and controlled. They've just bought it for $1 billion. Boom, thank you very much, acquired. It didn't stop there though. They then thought, well, this is cool, let's carry on. They bought something called Ant Farm or Ant Hill, I'll tell you now, so I got it written down somewhere. It is called Ant Financial. I was close. Okay.
Ant Farm.
Ant Financial does like digital banking. Well, we would probably refer to more as e-wallets.
Yeah.
Okay. They were already an affiliate of Alibaba and Alipay. They run the Alipay side for Alibaba. Okay. For $4.5 billion. So you're talking about $100 billion. There's $5.5 billion with one company, not even the treasure troves of the government and all the other companies. This is just one player. Now, why I say the world needs to watch out, you know, we've often spoken about Americans, and we've said with 400 million people, with all the resources, with all the tourist opportunities, whether you're looking to snow or fish or whatever it may be, they don't need the rest of the world. You know, we say like when they sneeze, the world gets flu and so on. Hey, man, those days are over. I mean, Trump or Dump. You're saying that China's committed the biggest controversy and they've stolen from America. Bullshit. They produce at
they
the
produce
right
more
prices.
Than everyone else.
Exactly. So it's going to be quite interesting to see how the fintech comes out from a country that is so controlled, so watched, which I think is awesome and is definitely a good lead into our guest today.
Yeah.
When we're looking at watching security, online reputation, all these wonderful things. And you've got a country that is so closed off that's now saying, hold on a second, $100 billion, we're here to play.
But
they can own it.
How's WeBank?
WeBank. Oh, from the WeChat guys.
From the WeChat group. So a colleague of mine, Samantha Randall, she keeps a close eye on that market. They are over half a billion users in under 9 months from start.
Jeez, that's madness, eh?
That's madness.
Right, so now that we're getting into financials, anyway. I need to turn on a mic and introduce our guest today. So with us today, we have Llewellyn Morkel, who's the CEO and founder of eEscrow. How's it going?
Hey, Brett. I'm very well,
Which
thanks.
Brett?
B1, yes. B1. Yeah. I would have said Bomber.
Bomber, of course.
There we
yeah,
go. There we he go. Was listening. Thanks for coming in again, public holiday. Yeah. I mean, this is commitment, guys. I mean, I think we should actually just hold on a sec. Can we just...
Yay!
There we go. So,
he's been
basically,
trying to use that all day.
I've been looking at it. So I've got a drum roll as well if you really
Whoa,
want.
No way.
Okay, I'll leave it. So... Llewellyn's joined us today, and I think, Brett, that's also why I wanted you to come and co-host, not because the other Brett was being lazy, but I think this is definitely going to the fintech space and innovation, and I know, Brett, you love innovation. Okay. So, if you can, let's start with eEscrow. And guys, it's not eScrow or eScrow, because I was joking about that early on with my the guys outside. They're like, what's that? Okay. So, I think, take us through eEscrow, and then obviously we can move into what eEscrow is all about.
Sure. So, the word escrow means to keep in trust. And it's a word that evolved from many years ago. So it's not a new concept. Lawyers, attorneys around the block, they all use it constantly to keep two parties' money in trust until some action has been fulfilled. So in that environment, what e-escrow does is, and that's a website that we created, we take a buyer and a seller and we offer them the opportunity to do good and healthy business, safe business, by holding their money into trust while the seller produces the goods.
Okay, so let me jump in there again and unpack escrow even further. I think the most common example of escrow would be when you buy and sell property, because you have a transferring attorney. You pay your deposit into the transferring attorney's account. He or she holds that money. And then when the house goes through for registration and transfer, the money is released to either the bank or the seller, correct?
Exactly.
Okay, so basically you bring, it's a menage a trois, baby. You bring a third party into your transaction legally.
Double adapter.
There we go. Now I know I've had Brecher today. So,
can't believe I just said that.
It's okay.
It's your influence,
and
Brett.
The podcast will be there for prosperity later on as well on recordings. Why I'm fascinated by this, and if you've listened to the last, 15 shows, we talk about online safety, online reputation, transacting online, dealing with people you know. So e-escrow, you've now obviously taken the concept or principle of escrow and you've moved it online.
Exactly. So what we often see is, and it's in today more than any other day, years before, we've got online shopping and online trading where you've got a platform like OLX where somebody would go and put goods up for sale and then wait for somebody to put a deposit down or pay them the money over. So it's a classic problem. Who makes the first move? Is it the seller that ships the goods over to the buyer, or is it the buyer that puts the money into the seller's account? And e-escrow tries to bridge that gap. So what we do is we allow the buyer to put money into an account. We then verify that money, check that the credit cards are real, check that the money is actually in the account, and then we guarantee it to the seller. And from that point of view, it makes that portion of online business just a little safer.
Oh, that's going to cause the entire classifieds market to explode.
But I think it's absolutely paramount that we finally have something like
yeah.
this. You know, if I use the teacup Yorkie example. There was a phase probably about a year ago when one of these stupid Hollywood people started walking around with one of those little dogs. And then all of a sudden, people are immigrating, they're breeders that are leaving or whatever the bullshit is. And, you know, you pay them. All they need is a good home for their pet, their beloved animals. I mean, they're breeders. They're not beloved. They're farms. And all they need is 2,000 rand for the, the documentation or transfer fees or courier fees, whatever. So in good faith, you're paying them because you're not buying the dog, you're paying for a service. And then, the dog never arrives. Go figure. Now, I've seen that a lot. I'm not going to name the online portal because I'm sure they all have their problems, okay? And they're quite good. They warn you. They say there's like tips for buyers and tips for sellers. Meet in a public place. Only use cash. Blah blah blah.
But you're taking all that pain out.
Correct. But yes, I tried to sell a device the other day, a cell phone, because I could see how you're looking at me, bummer, and you're going a device. So okay, not that crack screen thingy majority you had. And I got one of these emails. From a Google or Gmail account, as it always is, which there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, people keep anonymity online. It's fine. But I'm in Nigeria or Cameroon, wherever it was. The phones are so expensive here. I will pay your price. Now, first of all, no one pays your price. Everyone makes a counter offer.
I feel like I've experienced the same story,
you
by the way. It
have.
Just feels way too familiar.
But that's it.
I think it's happened to us so many people.
If you're happy to do that, please send me your banking details. Mm. Boom. Okay. Now, here's a question I want to ask you, okay, is, and I rate myself as quite a tech-savvy person, that, but if I give you my bank details, because they say you should never give your bank details, what would the risk be of giving my bank details? My understanding, or before you answer that, my understanding is you don't take the money via your bank because they send you a proof of payment, which could be fictitious. That's easy. It's called Photoshop. But is there a risk of actually sharing your bank details with a third party online? Can they do something or transact?
They actually can. There is legislation that's busy being passed that you can't just load debit orders anymore, and that debit orders need to be approved once a week or once a month. And that's the real risk. The moment you share your banking details, a party that wants to cause harm could load that onto a debit order system. And with my bank, I had a debit order going off the other day. And when I queried it, the bank asked me to go speak to the people that's doing the debits and stop it at that point. They didn't want to stop the debit order on their side. And that makes it very difficult, and it makes it very dangerous for people that's debiting, because they won't want to stop it either. So where does it leave the consumer?
Brett, do you want to jump in?
Yeah, that's called authenticated collections. And that's been passed on. I work at Barclays. And so we've been rolling out our authenticated collections. And it does go away to solve that, because you get a notification before the direct debit goes off. It does throw a bit of a hurdle in the commercials, in the flow and ease of commerce, I guess, because it's another step where you've got to pause, where something could be disrupted. So I guess we've got to be careful of that. But these regulations are good, but I'd rather see them actually be driven by industry, like what you guys are doing. Let's go way out of our way to protect the consumer first, and then we don't actually need regulation in play to be able to catch up. So we should be leading regulation more so.
And the fun thing about what technology is doing is we're offering an intermediary step that you never have to put your banking details out there. You get websites like Pay2, Zapper, eEscrow, that you put your banking details on your user profile in the website. Nobody ever sees that. It's the company, the eEscrow, that pays out into your bank account. We put our banking bank account numbers out there so that people deposit into our bank account, so that you don't run the risk of debit order fraud.
Okay, awesome. So let me ask another question. Brett, I mean, you are in the bank, so maybe you've got some more insight on this as well. I know that with a credit card transaction, I can have it reversed. As the credit card holder, I can walk into a bank, they give me a one-page form, and I go, I didn't get the goods, or the goods were faulty, or I've had a fight with the person, blah, 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 sign, bang, the money's done. It's up to like 120 days or 180 days or something.
Yeah, there's a time limit.
I don't know if it applies to debit cards as well, but I know that with a credit card. I don't know if, Llewellyn, if you have any info on this. But you mentioned now that the banks don't want to help you with a debit order and or stop order. Why? You know, again, I'm the client. I'm Standard Bank or Absa Bank, whoever bank it is. I'm the client, not the person that's collecting the debit order. What would their willingness or lack of willingness be? Why would they not want to just say, same thing, stop it, boom?
No, absolutely no idea. I'm also the person that pays for that debit order.
That's the thing.
So
I can tell you exactly why.
Tell us.
It's legacy systems. So the banks sit in such old systems that when they're written in these mainframe environments, the cost was so overwhelming. So to be able to put in the tech to be able to do that, they just couldn't warrant the cost versus the benefit. Now regulation has forced their hand to start actually putting the investment down on the ground to actually change it.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. You do think, as a consumer, often think, why the hell isn't the bank looking out for me? Guys, it's down to basic business. What is the cost versus the benefit at the end of the day? In the future, we should see, because of fintech businesses challenging the banks, that these kind of decisions will be taken more seriously, because it becomes a disruptive play instead of just a cost kind of analysis.
Sure. I mean, I was thinking about it as well in prep for the show. The banks are encouraging us to transact online. They don't want us in branch. They don't want branches, let's be honest. I mean, you can't get rid of them yet, but they don't want branches. But
unless the coffee's good.
Well, as I said, they don't want us in the branches. But if you're encouraging me to transact online, okay, and if you almost making it that I need to transact online, my statements are coming online, everything's happening online, then I should be able to manage my account online. And one of those things should be kill switch, no more debit order, thank you very much. I mean, Llewellyn, I know from your background as well, from the early days of mobile, and Brett, you as well. I mean, we're all pretty much dinosaurs of mobile. When those rep services and subscription services started, you couldn't get out of it. Short of changing your number, you couldn't. Now, You can.
Yeah.
You make a phone call to your service provider, and they can it. They jump on and they can it straight away. So, I mean, the banks do need to start having our backs.
I think you can actually see, you expect to see more from the banks because, again, it's the disruption forces where small businesses are moving in with a limited amount of resources and being able to challenge at a customer level, offering great services to customers, things that the customers have always wanted that the banks haven't provided. So the banks either respond or they don't.
Mm-hmm.
And we know what happens if they don't. Yep. Exactly.
Imagine a world where on a monthly basis you got an SMS, and when you click on the link in the SMS, it opened a list of all your debit orders, and you can choose which ones you pay at what on what date. So it's all authenticated. It's all approved by the customer. Yeah. But he gets a list. You know exactly what all your requirements are. You need to pay your bond. But do you have to pay it today, or do you wait 3 or 4 days until you've got money in your account before you pay it?
I like that, but I'm actually going to wear the bank's hat here. I can't believe I said that. Let's use a bond as an example. So I think there's 99% merit in that idea, and I'd love to see something like that happen. But then what starts to happen with irresponsible lenders? So I haven't got money in my account because I went Puzza Thursday last week, and I get this SMS that says Truers and Edgars and bond, and I'm like, I need to have cool clothes. I'll pay Truers, but I won't pay my bond. You know, so that's always going
to
be the challenge.
I guess that's where you start balancing the financial aspects. You say, well, you're more than welcome to take a 3-4 day break, but that's going to incur a nominal interest fee on top of it.
Yeah, I suppose.
That's, you know, you can live with it because you need the time. But if you really don't need the time, it is going to cost you a couple of bucks more. So
in fact, I'm just listening to what you're saying. You could probably, what they'll do is they'll give you a one-time pass. So you can say, okay, well, it's not the first, it's going on the fourth. So you can say not today, and it'll have a default the fourth. So you get the 72 hours, whatever, to find the cash. So
so in a lot of meetings that I have in the bank, this is called solutionizing.
Okay, solutionizing. Does e-escrow, so I'd like to understand the mechanics of it, because the word e-escrow tells me it's an online service.
Sure.
Do you only work in the online environment? Is online your conduit or your vehicle to help escrow services? What's the differentiator? Do you work in the real world and real offline transactions? Take us through maybe some of the examples of what you guys are doing.
So yes, e-escrow is an online service, and we've invested quite a lot of time and money in building the entire process flow of an escrow transaction. So you can imagine, coming from a law background with the entire escrow solution, there must be a lot of documentation and legalities that need to be computed into the system. We've taken all of that and hidden it from the consumer and said, you know what? Fill out in 4 steps your transaction, and you can specify the buyer, the seller, the agent, percentages commission, days that you have to inspect the goods after it's been delivered, etc. There's just so much that you can do with the system, and it's all online. It's made easy for the consumer. So one of the very first transactions that we had was a game transaction,
right,
where they had 3 sable. Changing hands from one farmer to the other. Now, what I didn't know is that there's a lot of corruption and fraud happening in game transactions. Because you decide, you see 3 sable that you want to buy.
Which 3?
Exactly. So you pay your $1.5 million for the 3 buck.
I believe so. That these things go, they're like 700,000-800,000 exactly. Some of these.
So we received the $1.5 million into our account. We issued the guarantees for it.
I thought it was only 3 bucks.
Oh, wait. Breath and breath is confusing me.
Carry on. So I'm just being followed.
So we received the money. They shipped or transport the 3 sable over to the buyer's farm. And they have 7 days where the vet will come out and inspect the animals, make sure it's fine before the money gets released. And that's a classic example of how escrow works. So
that's quite complex. If you take every single escrow scenario that you could manage, that verification process must get crazy complex. How do you manage that?
It's taken a while to build the system. Yeah. In our situation, we look at the money. We guarantee and verify funds. We do not guarantee or verify the sable. We don't manage the vets.
Got it.
So just do the back-end system. We're the Uber of sales.
Yeah. So you must be quite interested in the blockchain, I'm guessing.
Oh, absolutely.
That's you know, that sounds like the perfect application for a blockchain platform.
Take the listeners through blockchain and what's involved or not involved.
To try to do it simply. So we all know blockchain when we from Bitcoin. So Bitcoin is the cryptocurrency, mm-hmm. And that's done very well. And the currency is what's driven the build of something called the blockchain. And the blockchain essentially is a distributed encrypted database. And what I mean by that is instead of having a database in one spot, what they do is they break the database into thousands and thousands of different little nodes, and they link them up through, I think they're called hashes, or they hash them, which kind of links it up with some cryptography. And that cryptography is unbreakable, again, because the codes that are running behind it are so, and the algorithms are so complex. So each machine is running all these different algorithms all at the same time with that same database that's broken up 1,000 different times. So it's pretty much impossible to hack. Challenge accepted.
Yeah. Can I jump in there?
Yeah,
so it's basically a worldwide ledger. It's a piece of paper with a lot of transactions written on electronically. So this gets distributed and saved on millions of computers. Yeah. And these computers check each other. They check that your version of this ledger is exactly the same as my version of this ledger. If it's not, I'm kicking you out of this network up until the point that you conform. Mm. So even if you can break one of those ledger documents, if you can break into it and change a value, there's a million others that you still need to change.
And it's done by consensus, right?
It's all done by consensus. Okay. All the servers need to agree that a change has been made.
Wow.
It's an amazing system.
It's like Bitcoin on steroids. I mean, it's taken that whole crypto transactions to the power
of 10. I think the Bitcoin was used to create the miners, right? And the miners are the ones that do
The miners are the guys that make the money.
Make the real money.
They move money between people.
All right, so I'm gonna actually post a real world scenario that happened to me. Okay, I'd like you to tell. Let's use a real example of how escrow could have actually saved me having some problem. Now, I normally moan about bad service and things like that, and I generally don't name people, but I think I've started a bit of a trend. Last week, I named someone for fantastic service. It was a small business, I had a great time, good experience, etc. Now, I've had a cuck experience, and it's actually cost me money. Okay, so I'm going to take you through what happened to me, and hopefully people never use this company. So, I needed a new kitchen. I mean, it's that stage when, house needs a new kitchen. And I mean, the first thing with the kitchens and bathrooms, it's budget. You can get a kitchen for 50,000 rand, you can get a kitchen for 500,000 rand. You know, it's just what have you got to spend. So we my wife and I, we went and got designs done, and we really, really liked this kitchen. And then, of course, we got the quote. Now, it's important that you notice I got the designs done. That's very important to the story that I'm going to tell you, because that's where I, and you guys tell me, you can be judge and jury and you can tell me if I'm full of shit or if I'm right, and if these people are wrong, cool, we'll name and shame. So basically, great looking kitchen, couldn't afford it. So we had to shop around. So we get to this company called, well, I'll name and shame them if you agree with me or disagree. Let's save it till the end. So I get to this company. And I must say that from the moment my first dealing, I mean, the owner's, he is Napoleonic. It's the only way I can describe it. When you walk in and you're dealing with a guy who stands 1 foot tall and his arms folded, okay? I'm already got the heebie-jeebies and I'm not feeling the love. Anyway, so we gave him our designs. And remember, our designs, this is important because this is part of the whole verification. And we said to him, this is what we want. I also gave him my budget because I thought, you know, I'm not going to screw around anymore. I'm not going to go and get another freaking design, another quote, and otherwise rather go back to the drawing board. So I gave him the budget, and he said to me, he'll also do a couple of designs. So when we meet, we can go through the designs, right? So the quote came back within our budget, but I mean, I expected that, okay? The thing that started, though, is the granite or the slate or whatever you call the surface, you know, I don't know what the right word is. We had a choice of like two colors that we were looking at. And the one is like crap load more expensive than other. I must just do a little side note there with my wife. If you hang 7 black dresses that all look the same, but one of them is 3,000 million times more expensive than the other 6, she will pick it off the shelf. Okay, it's just, I'm just putting that up there, and I'm sleeping on the couch when I get home tonight. But, so, this one slate that she liked, which was more expensive, was also quoted within our budget. So I'm thinking, well, hey, you know, we're doing well here. Things are good. Things are happy. Shop around. Then it comes to the time we're going to meet, and we go and sit with him to go through the designs, and he's like, I had to re-quote it because that slate you wanted, that's a lot more expensive. Prices have gone up. We blamed exchange rates, whatever. Okay, fair enough. He made a mistake. He realized he made a mistake. He quoted incorrectly. I'll give it to him. The other one, slate or whatever, wasn't that bad. Okay, so we cool. So, like I mentioned, these were our designs. So we go there and we meet with him, okay, and it's now at the point where we're going to talk money. So now I come back into the situation because the rest of it's not really important, the up and downs and so on and so forth. So we go and sit in the showroom, and my father-in-law is actually an architect, so I had him with me so he could look in that. So he's taken our designs. I wish we were writing. I could put our in caps. So he takes our designs and he's put them into like a CAD type program so you can see, which gives you the measurements. Okay, now surely if you're going to cut something out, you have to do that because otherwise you don't know what the sides are. I've just given you pictures. Okay. And we said, okay, so what other designs have you got? And the response we get is, no, this worked. Okay, so we haven't got any other designs. This is just our original design that's been captured in CAD for costing purposes. And they started to make one or two little changes. Now, I mean, if you've worked in CAD, you click on something, you drag it, it's not really rocket science. I got bored, started walking around. And I must say that the workmanship in the showroom was crap. I mean, the tap, you have to like hold it. It doesn't stay up by itself. There were paint drips down this. I'm like, okay, now I know why we're within budget. Okay. And I discussed it with Gail that night. I'm like, Gail, did you see? She says, yeah, I know. I actually mentioned that to him as well. Like, you know, you're putting this in your own showroom. Anyway, if she's mentioned to him and I've mentioned it to him and there was going to be problems with it after the fact, then we would discuss. So here's the kicker. So now I've said to him, cool, I need an invoice so that I can pay the deposit. It was a 60% deposit that I had to pay. So I get an invoice. So I pay the deposit, okay, in good faith. Bank details there, I pay the deposit, boom.
DE escrow.
No, you see, I'm a doer. I didn't know about escrow, but that's why I'm having this now.
Yes, man. I thought that's where you were going with this. Who doesn't do that?
Well, I didn't know about that, but now that we're talking about it, now I know, and okay. Anyone else in the future. So, back to my kitchen debacle.
Your non-escrow
experience. But this is why I was asking if it's only online or if it's the real world, because this would be a kind of transaction that might have saved a lot of pain and suffering, both for me and all the company. And so now we've paid the deposit.
What company was this?
Okay, I'll name them. TNT Kitchen Designs.
TNT?
Dynamite.
Yeah, not the service.
No. Quite okay. Explosive.
This was just my opinion, but okay, that's your opinion as well. So you guys can join me on the lawsuit. Yeah, TNT, boom, boom kitchens. So Gail's now speaking to him because, oh, here's the kicker. So we finished. This is like a Saturday afternoon, whatever. Right, I forgot about this part of the story. So I said to him, can I have the designs? Because I want to take the designs that he's got now because we've made a change in the cupboard and we've changed the color and blah, blah, blah. I want to take it home and actually look at it where my kitchen is because I haven't done that yet, okay? I said, up until I didn't really care, but now it's getting real. Now it's my money, okay? No, I'll give it to you when you pay the deposit. That's the response, which I thought, Llewellyn's eyes are like going, what? But that was my response, but I'm like, ugh, it's Napoleon. We all know what happened to him anyway, so it's fine. We'll leave it. So names used in this broadcast are to protect the guilty or innocent. So, anyway, so we go home, and it must have been I've paid. So I've got the invoice came through quickly. Sure, that was like I asked for invoice, done, boom, finished. So I paid timelessly as well as I do, and now we're asking for the designs, and we're asking. So, and then Gail also, you have to strip an old kitchen out before you can put a new one in. So, we're going to use my father-in-law's builders to do that. So, but I've got to time this. I don't want to be in a position I'm looking at a big hole and I can't eat or drink or anything. So,
KFC.
We ask him to commit in writing. And this is why I'm telling the story, because I'm asking for the things I believe are right. I'm asking for a commitment in writing. I'm asking for an email. I'm asking for, I've signed off something that I haven't actually seen. Okay, so if it ever did have to go legal, what am I? What leg have I got to stand on? I don't have the desire. So, well, you paid, you accepted, and you could build me a Lumo Pink bloody kitchen, mind you. Anyway, so so it's about 4 days or 5 days. Now, WhatsApp is a beautiful thing for all of us tech non-challenge people like us. Two blue ticks. You've read it. Okay. So I come home, and I can see Gail's frustrated, and I'm like, what's wrong? She goes, I'm not getting any joy with this guy. So me, being me, I just sent a message, and my message was fairly firm and basically said, you know what, if you're not interested, I'll send you my bank details and, you know, give me my money back. Okay. Cause I'm kind of that kind of guy. I said, and by the way, just by the, cause the week before this show, we did CRM, customer relationship management. Okay. Guys at Ikenio, there's a client called TNT Kitchens. They need to learn about CRM. Because the response I get back from him, I don't chase customers. In writing, okay, I have this on WhatsApp with two blue ticks. If that's what you want, in fact, I won't even read it to you because it was drivel. I mean, it wasn't even English. It kind of, you know, we type on phones and you can make typos, but I mean, this was drivel. But this, the summary of it was, I don't chase customers, and if that's what you want, then send me your bank details. So I thought, fine, if you, here's my bank details.
Oh, next mistake.
What?
You should never give your bank details.
Well, I didn't have
escrow. I'm sure we've just advised that.
Okay. This was in the past. And that's why I'm asking the future, because I'm going to save the listeners and everyone else in my network. And Brett, we know my network.
Yeah.
And your network and Llewellyn's network.
There's at least four people in it.
Yeah, exactly.
Between all of us.
Yeah.
Five. I have a girlfriend. So.
Okay, five. Can I add my kids there?
Can I go back to my story of doom and gloom?
Sorry.
So the next message I get back from him is, okay, I'm keeping R1,000 back for designs.
And your designs.
My designs. Okay. Now, all three of us have spent time in agency and marketing. How many times have we designed or pitched or had meetings
and held money back
and never got it and held money? Oh, no, but we've never got paid.
We never even got the money first. Yeah.
So I said to him, are you sure you want to do that? You know, is that really how you want to go? So basically,
what should have happened there is, on e-escrow, you've got milestone-based escrow, which is a project escrow.
That's what I was trying to get to.
Exactly. Okay. So right in the beginning, you'd agree with the kitchen supplier.
TNT Kitchen Designers.
Whom I'm not quite certain is in the wrong, but we'll take that offline.
Okay.
I'm just trying to get myself out of the lawsuit.
Okay.
Oh, good point. Brett, I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, I'll just go on the list of my own. Don't touch them. I mean, I still don't have a kitchen, and I'm R1,000 for the fun.
So either you or the kitchen supplier could have gone online and just started a new transaction. You call it a milestone, or you select milestone-based transaction, and that allows you to define project milestones, as many as you want, and you define it. You say, first is create the 3D model, and you'll pay him 10% ahead of time to do that. Then as he delivers on that milestone, you release payment. So you are at least assured that the first milestone has been met, and you can detail what that milestone includes.
Can I jump in there?
You may.
I probably went to 5 kitchen companies, okay? All of them range between 40 and 60% deposit. Mm. So if I had wanted to do the milestone thing, are you suggesting then I could have said, okay, it was 60% in this case, okay? So even that, most expensive and the worst service. But if it was 60%, are you saying I could have said, fine, I'll give you 10%. When I get my drawings and I get my commitment in writing, I'll release the other 50. So I'm still within the 60, but I can have multiple milestones within.
That's absolutely part of the negotiation.
Because they turn around and say, oh, we haven't got the money to buy our materials and we can't start.
And that's why you can also set the agreement up so that you get money up front. There are portions, and if they can say, listen, we're going to charge you up front to buy materials, we know that that's an expense that you need to pay. So you can release that part of the funds up front. The thing is, in this market that we are, it's so difficult to get new business. New business is not coming, is not walking through a door.
Apparently it is with these guys. They don't chase customers.
In most instances, it's not. Okay. So you need to start being flexible around this. And remember, it does not, the e-escrow does not just protect the buyer. It also protects the seller. So now there's the kitchens guy would start doing the work, but he doesn't know whether you still have the other 40%. You've paid him 60. Is he going to complete the job and then wait for the other 40% and hope that you still have that money? It also protects him. So he knows that a milestone has been funded ahead of time. So he's going to get paid no matter what for that milestone before he starts with the next one.
So what you're saying, though in to make it fair for both, is that the actual 100% would be paid into escrow.
In portions.
And then released as the agreement between the buyer and the seller.
Exactly
and
that.
And the flexibility of that is there as well.
But you do not need to pay the entire 100% up front. You just fund the next milestone. So if you're on milestone 2, you fund milestone 3 before the work for milestone 3 is done.
Okay. So here's the kicker. Who is e-escrow? And I mean that now from the buyer or seller point of view. So like Brett and I are going to do a transaction. Okay, he's going to finally buy a decent phone from me, even though it's like my fourth generation phone. We don't know each other, but we also don't know you. So what degree of confidence do we as consumers have, or the two parties in the transaction, that you, and not just e-escrow, I mean any escrow service, what is your... What is your mandate? What is your guarantee? How does it work? I think that's also quite important.
Very, very valid question. So there's two parts to e-escrow. The first is the software that manages the e-escrow transaction. But we are not deposit takers and we're not a bank. We've got on the other side, on this arm's length away, we've got a FSB registered category 2 fund manager.
You just hurt my ears. Then. I've got earphones on.
Sure.
An FSB Fund 2 category. What?
So an FSB registered company that manages the money. So they are licensed to take deposits in and manage those deposits on behalf of clients.
Okay.
Now, you would think of a situation, a wedding. You're planning a wedding, you need to put down a deposit with a venue 19, 12 months ahead of time. Those people sit with that deposit. They're not attorneys. They're not a bank. You have no idea what you're busy funding with 100,000 rand. Exactly. Nuts. And people would have endless stories of losing those deposits. So that's what an e-escrow service does. But we cannot, because I'm as a software person, I don't have that FSB registration. I've got no auditors that check me. But we've got the FSB registered fund manager that checks the money. So we can't touch the money. It's our software and you that provide the instruction to release funds or do not release funds.
And your revenues come from a transactional-based charge?
Correct.
Something like that, right?
Yes. Transaction fee? Nice. Around about 1-1.5%. It's nice. Not breaking
Jeez,
the bank.
That's not... No. No. I mean, I just lost more than that to an idiot. You know, just because we didn't have an agreement in place.
Exactly.
And in fact, funny enough, I read through the terms and conditions and there's no reference to... If you cancel, you know. So, I mean, it's actually theft. That's what it is. Tantamount. Anyway, but back to... So, that was my next question, was the percentage or fee. Who pays that? Because I'm selling stuff, okay? I'm not going to release the stuff until I get paid. But you buying it and you saying, well, I'm not going to release the money until I get the goods. So, where does the... What's the correct place for that fee to lie? And, you know, we've just both of us just said... It's 1%, or even if it's 5%, it's not a lot of money for peace of mind. But hold on a second, it's my 5%. You know, all of a sudden that human.
Which one?
So who actually pays the fee?
In the negotiation, you can set it up. You can say the buyer pays it, seller pays it, agent pays it. It's a two-way split or a three-way split.
So the flexibility.
You can agree.
What would be the right way to split it? I mean, who? Who needs more protection, the buyer or the seller, or is it not like that? Is the transaction dependent?
Come back to an online advertising, what do you call it?
Classifieds
example. Both buyer and seller are equally exposed.
That's true, actually.
You never know whether the bicycle that you're going to buy is a real bicycle or is it something that a fictive bicycle coming from Cameroon.
You get a scale model.
Exactly. So as a buyer, I'm as exposed as a seller. So it really depends. The model, the standard model would be that the buyer pays the escrow fee. The seller pays the merchant fee. So the merchant fee is when you use a credit card, there's an acquiring fee that needs to be paid of 3%.
Yeah.
So that would normally be the model, but in escrow, in the negotiation, you can agree that. Escrow even handles the entire delivery of it. I mean, set your couriers up, you can tell them to collect, you can tell them to deliver, and all of that is automated in the system.
Sure, that's amazing.
Brilliant.
So basically, you can take 99% of the sting off the table. I mean, at the end of the day, it's going to come down to resolution if there's a fight. I mean, what actually happened? Okay, well, here's an interesting question. So, the phone. I've now advertised the phone. It was 5,000 Rand. 1% is what? 50 Rand. I'm happy to pay it. I send 5,050 Rand to escrow. The seller releases the phone. It comes to me. I'm not happy. Now I've got to pay to get this back. Or, you know, is there a resolution that's handled online as well through escrow? Or do I have to now contact the seller and say, listen, this is not, you know, not what you're supposed to have sold me. The screen's cracked or something like that.
So within the escrow platform, there is a way to do the resolution. However, in the buyer would have to return that on his own cost, at his own cost. Now, you might think that sounds weird, but buy something from Macro or Checkers and come home and it's broken. They don't come and fetch it from you. You
That's
actually have to
100% right.
drive back to 100%. Their customer services.
Yeah.
And moan like a stuffed pig when you get there and some folk behind the counter. And I drove all the way back here with this broken thing.
I had to do that this morning.
There we go.
And that's the principle that it works on.
So it's pretty much like a normal transaction. The only difference is that the money is going through escrow. So the risk is, well, it's actually zero then.
Well,
because and you don't release
it. Escrow for everybody, surely, yeah.
Sure. E-escrow, so yeah. Escrow for everybody. One of the important parts of escrow is that we take the risk of chargebacks. So when somebody pays you with a credit card, it is possible that they can remove the money. They can withdraw, dispute that transaction. For a buyer and a seller, that's a massive risk.
Sure.
In escrow's case, we take that risk. We don't pass that risk on to the consumer. So it makes that 1%, 1.5%, whatever it is, it makes it all the more valuable. It makes it worth your while to pay it.
Yeah.
I think I just want to quickly wrap it up using the dispute side of it. What happens in a situation where you've released the money, you haven't released the money, there's a dispute that comes to an absolute loggerhead, it's not going anywhere. Do you allow for something like an arbitrary, let me simplify the question. I've put money into escrow's account. Goods arrived, they're terrible. I've now sent them back, okay? The seller's saying that I broke the goods on the way. In other words, we're now at a fight in a normal offline transaction. I come to you and say, I want my money back. Can you release that money back to me on the basis that I've told you I've sent the goods back? Or do we need to go to arbitration, the buyer and the seller, to get an instruction to tell you to release the money? Because what protection then does the buyer, the seller have that the buyer did break the goods and send them back in?
There's an arbitration process that you would need to go through, and we only act on instruction of the arbiter.
Okay, so you have brought that one through as well.
That both Brett and Brett have settled, and please pay 50% to each of them type of thing, whatever the resolution would be.
Cool. Okay, well.
Sure.
Now, we got to wrap up. We're getting close to the end here. You say escrow. I was going to say escrow for everybody, but escrow for everybody. Is it as simple as that, Llewellyn? I've done an escrow transaction in transacting before. I've had to go to a lawyer. I've paid fees. I've signed documents that were this thick, you know. Is it as simple as go online, conclude it, we're both happy, and then it becomes valid? Or is there a registration problem? What do we do to be able to use it?
It's as easy as going onto the website, e-escrow.co.za, click on the Start Here button, start a transaction. The entire registration process is part of starting a transaction. So whether you're the buyer or the seller or the agent, you can start your transaction online right there. And it doesn't need to be a local transaction. It can be an international transaction. We've just shipped 10,232 cans of energy drink. from a company in Gauteng out to Belgium with an American company doing the facilitation.
Sure.
So cross-border escrow, cross-border transactions is our biggest seller because people, who makes the first move?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Bomber, any concluding comments from you before I wrap it up?
I don't know. I've got the angry bird joke that I always used to say. And I can remember I was on stage a couple of times. So I'm going to drop it here
drop
as well.
It.
I don't know how many of your listeners don't know Angry Bird. And when I talk about it as a game, it's not my wife. Anyway, I just had to get that. I was itching. Nothing to do with the escrow.
I'm not even going to hit the applaud or the drum roll button.
I was giving you a drum roll opportunity, Brett.
Oh, not quite on that one. I'm sorry. Okay, so I apologize, but it is a public holiday. We dragged him out of a pub, apparently, not home. We'll go straight back there now. Llewellyn, thanks very much for your time. Guys, e-escrow.co.za. I suggest you use it if you're transacting online. I know I'm going to next time I buy my kitchen, which will not be from these people. So until next time, keep your screens clean and your knobs shiny.
Download the Cliff Central app. Available now on the Apple App Store and Google Play Store.
Cliff Central. The revolution.
I've got something important to tell you.
CliffCentral.com.